Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Middleton, and thank you for joining the Bridge to Everywhere. Samantha Berg and I are going to be talking to you tonight in a great discussion with Francois Vecchio. And he is a master of traditional meat craftsmanship. He has over 50 years of experience in the meat industry from farm to plate. He specializes in Italian, Spanish, and French and German traditional meat craftsmanship.
And from 1962 to 1980, Francois owned and operated his family's company in Switzerland, overseeing over 700 employees in the meat industry. In 1981, he landed in California and introduced European-style salami to the West Coast, first working with Bucero Foods, formerly Rapelli of California, then Columbus Salami Company. He's fluent in English, French, Italian, Spanish, and German, which is good because I'm not doing so great in English. He currently mentors award-winning artisans and chefs in the U.S. and Canada and organizes curing workshops in Alaska. Great to have you here, Francois. Welcome to the Bridge to Everywhere.
Well, thank you for having me. It's hopefully a fun time to explore a little bit our world of sausage, meat, and apparently beyond.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Sausage, meat, and beyond. That's what we're going to call this show today.
And Francois is known in the community as the poet of pork or the sage of sausage, and it's partly because of his deep, holistic philosophy that underlines the work that he does, and it's one of the reasons we really are excited to have you on the show. And there's an awful lot about the health of the community that ties into the food supply. And as practitioners in Chinese medicine, we're acutely aware of the kinds of struggles people have with their health that are directly tied to the quality of the food. So we definitely want to cover that in the topic today as well.
So what we'd like to talk to you about a little bit is to get an idea of how you started in the whole sausage-making world and, you know, what your life was like growing up and what you learned from working with artisanal food processing techniques compared to what you see now. This is a really broad topic, so let's start with, you know, from when you were a little boy growing up and how you ended up working with sausage.
As far as I remember, because it has been a very long route, I got... First, you have to understand that I was born in a family essentially Italian in style or culture, but in Geneva speaking French. The roots of my family are mostly in Savoy and Piemonte, so on both sides of the Alps. An ancient country that disappeared as a country because it has been swallowed by everybody around. A part was taken by the Swiss, the conqueror from Bern, part by the Italian, and the rest by the French. But it used to be, per se, a very special country with a language of its own. And in all the branches of my family, come they from what we call Italy today, Piemonte or Savoy, the attachment to the nature, the attachment to mountains, because all of these people always lived in valley very close to the mountain, might be the reason why I ended up in Alaska, because at some point I needed to get closer to mountains. But back to my own experience, as a kid in Geneva, it was in the late 40s, so just after the war, I was given by my grandma a butcher apron and a small butcher knife. So I was 12 at the time, and since we didn't have school on Thursday, mission was to go to the shop and learn to handle a knife and start learning to bone meat.
And this was your grandparents' shop?
At the time, it was already my parents, uh-huh. My father and two brothers. It was already a well-established business in Geneva. The grandfather had started at the turn of the century the first meat wholesale business in Geneva, copying what had happened in Paris under Napoleon III. where you had a shift in the culture, in the shift in the tradition, from the butcher was buying his animal from the farm, doing the slaughter himself and retailing the meat. The new business that was created is a centralized slaughter, a breaking of the carcass, and the sale of the meat as wholesale piece, which implied trading, because some piece, like the, let's say, the steak, the loins, were selling in Geneva, but some other piece had to be shipped to the countryside. So that was the nature of the business. The business at the time was occupying probably 30 employees, 30 butcher. It was wholesale and also retail. We were not making any sausage at the time, just curing some meat, not curing bacon. But the family, in order to support the meat business, had bought in land, farm. That was the root tradition where those people came from. They needed the dirt, they needed land to farm. And they had bought a couple of farms around Geneva in which to keep their animal, to have a ready supply of animal for the butcher trade. And at that time, that business had specialized into lamb, sheep, and mutton. We were a very big operation as far as mutton, buying lambs from the Alps in the late season when the local farmer didn't have enough forage for wintering their lambs, so they were selling them out. We were receiving them. We had grown hay during the summer, wintering them, and then pasturing them over a range that we had in the mountain above Geneva.
And what were they eating before you got them? Just grass? Just grazing on grass?
At the time, there was no big food science or nutrition science in the term of animal feed, and it was grass and some grain when you wanted to finish animal. To put some fat on the animal, you would just give them grain. So that was the context. So I learned that trade while I was still going to school. While my sisters were allowed and encouraged to go to university and get degree and getting smart, the male in the family had no choice. They were directed to the apprenticeship to become butcher, because that was the activity of the family. So I remember a conversation with my dad. I was probably 14 or 15, saying, "Hey, I want to become an agricultural engineer. I wanted to go out. I wanted to be in the field. I wanted to master the agriculture." So, no, stupid. You have a fantastic opportunity. You go to apprenticeship. So I got some schooling, all the way to a kind of a minor business degree, you know, the business being you learn to type on a typewriter, you do a little bit of accounting. Uh-huh. Our advantage being in Switzerland was that we had to learn the language. So I was immersed in foreign language immediately, so the proximity of Italy because of the family connection was obvious. We were French at school, speaking French all the time. We were sent to the Swiss-German part of Switzerland in our summer vacation to be immersed in Schweizerdeutsch, Schweizerdeutsch zu lernen, that weird language of the Swiss. So I was impregnated by that also, and give me a good basis to start blabbing all kind of foreign language, but also absorbing the characteristic of those different cultures. They're all European, but they have very different identity and very different style. if you have traveled, I think you have been to Europe, you have a notion of Italy. I mean, Italy is very different than Germany and France also. And when you go to Spain, it's also different. So that's how it started. And being channeled in the business, starting an apprenticeship, I was 18 at the time, 3 years, where you go from master to master, where you learn the trade hands-on, but at the same time you get a little bit of schooling to round up the formation.
So when you say master to master, do you mean there are different butcher shops and where you
principle
were?
Of the apprenticeship, which is something which is so badly missing in America,
Yeah. Is
that you get under a contract. You get hardly paid much, but you survive anyway. In my family, it was not an issue. The deal is that for a time set, a master, a professional master, takes care of educating you, showing you all the steps in the business. It starts with scrubbing the floor, cleaning the pots and the knife, etc. But progressively, you get into the action. Because I had already quite a formation, having been helping part-time in my family business, and not being too stupid, I glided through that formation, taking advantage of the system. I started at home, of course, but then I went to a specialty charcutier of Geneva, where in 3-4-6 months I learned an awful lot.
And charcutier, that would be sausage maker, correct?
Charcutier, yeah, we speak French.
Yeah, so we have to translate for our listeners.
Sausage maker, and when we say sausage maker, you have to understand sausage as handling the whole pig. Mm. Not just buying a commodity to make a bratwurst, which might be the American vision of the trade, you know, because everything is fragmented here.
Mm-hmm.
Out there, you would still get from the whole animal, take care of everything, blood, guts, offal, and processing everything in-house and selling retail. Not buying from wholesale manufacturer, trader from a big corporation and just retailing, marking up. It was really hands-on learning from A to Z. Then I went to work with a charcutier of a different style in the canton of Vaud, which is the next county close to Geneva toward the center of Switzerland. Then I went to Thun in Berner Oberland, in the place where people speak German, learning how to make German Wurst, which is not the same sausage that the French-speaking guy eat. Then I went to Zurich. I spent a time in Italy. Then fancy, I maneuvered a little bit within the contract, and I went to a school close to Paris, at the Chateau de Rambouillet, which is the residence of the President of the Republic, which is a farm, big farm, and also an agricultural school, because I still had that vocation to learn how to farm and how to tend animal, live animal, not just to turn them into sausage. So I went into a cours de berger accéléré, which is a accelerated shepherd training, lasted 3 months, in which I was in that school, far away from home, and my hobby was to take the bus to Paris, to the Quartier Latin. I found the library who was publishing all the books on agriculture, etc., and I probably read the value of an encyclopedia on the craft. So I went way beyond what I was taught at school. And being in Paris, I just introduced myself to some local butcher and ended up working as a butcher in Paris in the winter of 56. I remember that, because that was the winter when the French and the Israeli and the British tried to reconquest the Canal of Suez,
uh-huh.
And Eisenhower told them to pack and go home. And it worked. Now imagine that, Eisenhower telling the European, stop worrying, go home. What have we lost with our president today? They do just the reverse. They go worrying everywhere through the world. That's it. Another story.
Francois, I wanted to ask you, there was something that connected with you at a deep level to seek that much information to go deeper and deeper into the art. I'm just wondering if you could say more about that. It wasn't just something you were doing because the family required it of you.
I mean, you have, some sheer calling, or you have some impulse. And as a kid, I was always a bit independent, hyper-creative, always inventing new things to do, puzzling a little bit my thoughts, but that's the way it is. And it evolved into a kind of sense of the possibilities. I was born with a way of seeing where things go, feeling, sensing potential. And after my formation, I took over the family business, but with that sense of exploring. On one hand, I was climbing on every mountain I could find, exploring the wilderness, but also business-wise, creating all kind of venture diversification things, all of them responding to a kind of deep need to improve, rebalance, I would say do some good. You know, the general paradigm is that you invest in business to make money, and the focus is that selfish thing to grab, to take, to make a profit. So you try to detect opportunity that would be profitable. You try to find your mind where you can dig and get stuff. With me, it was never that way, and it created a lot of problem for me over life. But I went into a large number of projects that were trying to create something new that would allow for good is a simple term, but the opportunity to create, to bring about, to really produce, as opposed to taking. You know, when you look at managing for the bottom line, you squeeze everything you can to take money. All my projects were meant to organize a cooperation, a collaboration, and try to create something that was not existing but was needed, that the situation was demanding, if I can say so. Mm-hmm. So I had those antenna, I had that inclination to do that, and I went through adventure that turned out fantastic, very successful. Like I created out of nothing in Geneva a wholesale market, which was something that collectively the local vegetable growers, the local fruit and veggie importers, the local, we had the cold storage, we had fishmongers, we had our meat business, we had cheese import, we have food distributor that not directed by an authority but on their own with the help of the authority, because it was really feeling a need, we were able to create a wholesale market. I mean, invest humongous amount of money in a big project, which still today is very successful.
So it's still going on?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The wholesale market in Geneva, it goes back to the 60s. Mm-hmm. It's still the place in Geneva where you find the fresh food.
Well, we have to go there if we're going to
It was not a new idea. I mean, it exists in every city in the world. But in our local Geneva context, you had the local producer coming once a week or twice a week on the street early in the morning before traffic to market their wares. There was the importers who are located. Everybody was scattered. So that's one idea. Extension of that idea, I felt, again, in the Swiss context, we didn't have Walmart, but we had a company, a co-op called Migo, who was doing the same thing, basically killing every single craftsman business of food, the baker, the butcher, the dairy, the creamery, the veggie, fruit and veggie retailer, because they were creating supermarkets that were attracting people with car. So I put up a corporation that at some point had something like 15 shopping center, but all of them, that was the dream, based on individual operator. The problem is that the concept was interesting as a counterpart to the tendency to concentrate and centralize everything. You know, to fragment everything and push the industry into doing more and more package, if you know what's going on in America. The concept was fine, was supported by a lot of people, but we didn't have the organization to train, support, and fund the individual operator that would have had to operate at a higher price level than the big competitor, but with a much higher quality. And here I touch to something which is central to my life and current activity, is that contrast or duality that you have into two terms, quality versus quantity.
Okay. I'm surprised to hear that happening in Geneva. Yeah, because it sounds very uniquely American what you're talking about with the big store taking over and trying to centralize everything.
The world evolved, and I mean, Europe is following on the step of America, and in some degree, America is following on the step of Europe. Mm-hmm. You know, the supermarket was launched by Carrefour, for instance, in France in the 50s. Where it was, Walmart didn't even exist at the time. So we live the same civilization, European and America, with, as far as I can tell, a difference is that the European are still connected by their culture into a sensitivity which is lost in America. In America, we have cut away from that cultural tradition, which is so strong in Italy, so strong in Spain, about food, reason for which the Italian can export so much fancy product to America.
And it's literally culture, too, though, isn't it? It's culture, but it's also culture in the food, right? Like, no.
It's when you try to understand where it comes from. So you have an environment, a culture, which educate and trains the individual in a system of value. Okay, we don't have that in America. Instead, in America, you have that extraordinary system, that extraordinary simplification that started with the revolution and the creation of the United States. Where things are based on number, based on productivity, and everything is structured to support quantity. So America has the lead in productivity, in return on investment capital, on efficiency, on a lot of things. which work in America because the system, the legal system, supported that way. The value, I mean, when you look at an object, we speak of food, a piece of meat or a sausage, the first element that is perceived in America, which determines the value of that object, is the dollar amount.
Right.
Right.
While in Europe, to a larger degree, it's going to be the way that piece will react on your senses. So you have that duality, and you can expand it into rational, the work of mind, you know, the processing of data, the rationalization, the writing of law that regulate the system. So you construct a system, which, by the way, in America is going a little bit overboard and creating its own kind of problem now. It's an issue that needs to be addressed. But it's remarkable to see what it has done. Okay? On the other hand, and it's anchored in a mind function. The processing of data, the classification of image in our brain, which is exactly what we do on the computer. Mm-hmm. We don't deal with the stuff itself. We deal with symbols, with quote-unquote scientific, because scientific is positioned as the reality. You know, it's true, it's scientific, it's proven, it's duplicable, but it's all symbols, all right? And the dollar is the biggest of all. And we are driven by that system.
So it's the ideas and the representations of the thing rather than the thing itself.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
We are caught in a system where the image is taking for the stuff.
You know,
now,
yeah.
when we speak of quality, you deal with, well, it's an option. It's an option because you'll find people defining quality with the mental system. Mm-hmm. They'll describe quality typically in America. USDA specify the quality of sausage through the HACCP program, etc. It's going to be quantity of salt, pH, water activity, fat to protein ratio, water to protein ratio, bacteriological load, number of microbes that they could count. That's how they define quality.
I didn't hear anything about taste in there.
It's not edible.
Yeah.
It's good for processing in the computer. Or it's good for the lawyer, because then you have facts measurable to argue about in court and turn it into dollar and cents.
In case somebody tries to sue you because they got sick from your sausage.
That's another story.
Yeah.
The world which makes me tick is the different part. It's the world of the sensitivity, and quality for me is defined by the senses. We have in our body an instrumentation that is incomparable and much finer than any lab in the world. I'm going to be whacked for making such a statement because
it's
totally un-American in the current culture. But it's where Europe can help us. Because go to Italy, put a slice of salami in front of somebody, they are going to look at it. The appearance is going to connect with the product. Smell. Put in your mouth the contact, the feeling in your mouth. Do you know the mouth feel? Very, very important. The aroma that develops goes through your nose is where really they are going to connect with the product. So it's a sensory evaluation of quality. Quality which ties to the positive, the giving, because the way we're instrumented as a human being, we're educated, culturally we form a persona. selfish persona, eager to maximize the paycheck, maximize the stuff I can have in the house, getting the biggest house. I mean, taking in. But as the real being, we are actually functioning the other way, flowing out, giving, creating. And our real satisfaction in life comes from that function, from the giving, from the flowing, and not from the taking. That's something essential. Quality articulates on that, because quality is a way to connect with that flow. And we were speaking what I did in my life. I've always been biased, if I can say, because I've been in business all my life, always biased by the need to bring about quality in the product, quality in keeping the animal, quality in handling life, respecting life, trying to bring about structure, situation, product that help in that direction, which are really creative in that respect, not creative in the sense of having a potential in marketing to maximize the return.
That's beautiful, Francois. And I've heard you speak about the opportunity that exists in Alaska to cultivate this. Can you say a little bit about that?
A little bit is not the proper...
Can you elaborate
the proper
on that?
Qualification, because it's a long story. you know that as a youth, I climb mountain. I like mountain. I'm a pilot also. I like to take in the whole landscape. In everything I do, I have that inclination, and I think it may be a key to address all the situation that we perceive as problem today in our society. I mean, if you can tune into the whole, if you can see what's really going on, not think of what's going on in terms of cultural accepted value, you know, Democrat, Republican, fighting, blah, 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 but look at what the country needs, what the land needs, what the land has to offer. Look at the country. Open, connect, take it in now, not as a subject of thought. What I saw immediately coming in Alaska, and that goes to my first trip a long time ago when I first visited Alaska. Alaska offers in geology, in structure, mountain, valley, glaciers, rivers, an infrastructure and an environment which to me is very, very similar to what I learned, what I was immersed in Switzerland. Difference is 2,000 years of taking care of nature and turning a wilderness into a place that today makes quality again, fantastic cheese, fantastic meat, produce very good animals, and hiking to Lazy Mountain, for instance. You leave the parking, you hike for 10 minutes, you're in meadows with the vegetation in July or August is higher than you. So there's a fertility, there's a vitality in this land which struck me. And having, by profession, been in contact with the local guys who do meat product. I had even at the time contact with the fellow who was managing Matanuska Maid, and I got an understanding of the problem of the dairy industry. So with my experience, it's easy to see Alaska depending on imported food, except the salmon, the moose and the caribou, but all the rest basically is imported. And sitting in an environment, in a land that could provide abundantly and at a very high level of quality, What's happening is that because of the lack of education of people, you know, Americans are not educated. They are the wildest, as the wild local animal. It's amazing if you have some root a little bit deeper in Europe, etc. You can measure that difference. For instance, today I was with Nate Burris in his shop. We made we made a felino, which is selecting the meat of the fresh pork, putting it in a special casing. It's one of the best salami you can eat in Italy. I swear, he has felino in his case, which are as good as anything you can find in Langhirano or wherever you want in Italy. Sweet, aromatic, mellow, no hot pepper or harsh thing, you know, the macho attitude, the meat steak culture, something which, when I say I'm poet of the food, I mean it charms your senses when you taste it.
Yeah.
And they'd say, hey, but nobody buys it. But nobody knows what it is. Why would they be motivated to try something?
He doesn't have samples out on the counter for people to try?
Yeah. Education. Mm-hmm. Who is going to take the time to educate, to train, to get to that level? Because it's one of the key. Currently, those people produce what Americans know. It's a commodity, branded. You know, Oscar Mayer.
They got the Hormel label on it,
etc. Yeah. They buy the label. Mm-hmm. It's back in the mental world.
So we trust the label, but we don't trust
and
the
And they
product.
Never would adventure to taste something that they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Realize at what point we are limited and constrained by the type of culture, the type of education we have, and which is hammered every day, night of the day by the square, be it the TV or the paper, the advertising, or totally conditioned. So here you have Alaska potentially creating some of the best thing. You cannot do today because the local agent produce commodities and they don't make a penny because the commodity imported from the lower 48 are cheaper, so life is very difficult for them. So the only agriculture that survive is individual farmer who sell their animal directly to individual, but usually individual of different culture who have known through their culture how to slaughter, how to dress a pig, how to eat a pig. The American, if they do that, they need to go to the butcher shop to get it broken and packaged, and it costs a lot of money. Now, reposition the whole system in a dream situation. That's where my kind of vision come in. If, there are so many if on the road, but if we were able to form and train young people with a heart to learn the craft, to make fantastic cheese, to make fantastic meat, to make fantastic bread, to cultivate incredible veggie, make fantastic jellies, and etc. Potentially in the environment of Alaska, the product you would make that way, organic, natural, you would sell them at a super premium in all the foodies shop in the lower 48. You would create an export market out of Alaska. But who is going to train and create those individuals that can connect with farmers that need to expand what they do today, to be able to transform the product properly, to reach the quality level in the sense of what we were discussing before, capable of hitting a premium market and then establishing the proper cash flow with the system. Now, when you look at the valley, you have the fields. You have the farmer, you have a butcher who is learning now very actively and has his passion into doing it right, but coming from a very remote point. You have the slaughterhouse, but the slaughterhouse is working for the penitential or the re-education of
it's re-educating for prisoners?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So the staff is young people who have been come down who get the training, which per se is very good, but it creates all kind of limitation. Then the management is working for USDA for inspection. All the focus is in filling the paper, making sure that their numbers are correct, that they accumulate a stack of paper, and they cannot do what I ask them to do, which is to give me the blood of the pig or to give me the intestine, because the HACCP, the regulation, doesn't provide for it. But the base is here. You have that incredible potential of pasturing cattle, you know, where at up to 2,000 feet on the hills, you could have pasture the same way you have fantastic pasture in the Swiss Alps, making the best forage for dairy cows who make the best cheese. If you put your cows in the mountain in summer, then you can make hay in the lowlands and then have the forage for the winter. That's the Swiss system. It's doable here. But it's not the way people work now. Now they put their young animal on grass during the summer, and they kill the animal when the snow falls. And the dairy, the local dairy, the local creamery, package milk, makes a crummy cheddar when they have too much milk in summertime, but nothing like the famous Brie, Camembert, or Super Gruyère that the situation could require. There was a young fellow who had, for a time, goats on the foothill on the other side of the Little Susitna. He made a world-class cheese. Same thing. The local didn't know what it is, didn't pay for it, he couldn't sell it. The guy moved to New York, where he's successful now because he sells it to New York.
Mm-hmm. So we need sausage and cheese camps, is what you're saying.
What we need is, that's where there are so many if to coordinate. We need from the state an effort to train young people in the craft, create apprenticeship. Mm-hmm. Initially, send those guys in Europe to learn the trade, or bring from Europe the specialists. I happen to be here in the meat realm to help locally. As I'm so credible that people come from the lower 48 to work with me in learning. But that could be expanded in all the trade. Support farming with the funding so that you bring in sows to create a pork breeding and fattening system. You have the barley from Delta, from the Nenana to feed those here, so you have everything you need. Create a system where the pigs are outside. Let them live their life and make a better quality of pig that way with lesser cost. The dairy industry needs to be built on more cattle. Cattle opens the door to beef, and same thing with the barley and an extensive system that would use the pasture. You could have a complete system. Sorry to cough.
That's okay.
I talk too much. Complete system which recirculate a lot of things. Like, for instance, you make cheese, you have whey. Whey is an incredible support of pork feeding.
Right, you can feed it to the pigs and then their meat tastes better, right?
That's right. You could connect on it egg and et cetera. You have locally the vegetable growing. If you grow potatoes and carrots, you have to cull potatoes and carrots or broccoli because not everything is marketable. Where do you go? To the pigs. Mm-hmm. So everything helps everything if done not in the current economical system, in the current value system that we have. It failed. Everything that has been trade failed for that reason, because it only products mediocre commodity which cannot compete.
Right.
You need to raise the whole system to produce super quality, which has made Vermont, Maine, Wisconsin successful, which is totally supported nowadays by the foodie thing, and you guys concerned by the health, there is a treasure in it, because if you eat good and educate to respect your taste buds, you suddenly become balanced and healthy. Our system is able of auto-regulation. The problem is we're so distorted by the current culture that we get sick.
Right, and you know, when you have something to eat that maybe is a poor quality and people don't know the difference and they're experiencing failing health, it's very hard for anyone really to tie that to the food that they're eating, because, you know, after a person has a, you know, processed food dinners, they're not going to necessarily connect to feeling poorly with the dinner they ate. They're disconnected from that experience of eating the food and feeling poorly. And so just, and the other thing is that a lot of people, when they're eating foods, most of the processed foods are so intense in the flavors. It overwhelms. There's no subtlety and nuance. And that's been identified as good. And it actually leaves them hungrier than they started. So they don't feel nourished, and so they keep eating. And so that's also part of the whole system.
We call that the Lay's potato chip factor. Foods are now engineered so that people, where they're not a complete enough experience, so people will just eat more and more and more. But when you get a whole food, like when we went to your, after you invited all those chefs up from the Lower 48 and they had the training with you, and then you had the big event at the Palmer Depot, and we got to try all the different sausages. I mean, the experience of eating that food was being satisfied. There's a completeness to eating that food that's different than what we normally get with our processed foods in the supermarket.
The way it's an issue which reach in America, and America influenced so much of the world that you can see it's a world issue. It's going overboard. I mean, it's dramatic today at the politics in Washington, what's going on out there. People fighting for concept, for ideologies, for vision, for ego, unable to focus on what the situation demands and try to be intelligent resolving issue for the good of all. All right? So there we see it. We're hammered. We have the health issue, which is so close to you, where people are trained, educated to go away from their sense and go into what they think they know and destroy their life, destroy their health. What's the remedy? The American way, you're going to create a new foundation, go collect money, create a new school, and launch a new theory. More activity mentally.
Making a drug.
The only thing that really changed, and it changes everything, is to switch from what we have in the head to connect to the heart. Listen to your senses. That's the easiest thing. Recognize your senses. Trust your senses. They are yours. They are not the idea of the guy on TV who tells you that you should, or, you know, call now. senses. Then senses, I call it soul, because it's not mind. It's that thing which animates. I mean, senses are directly connected to what make my body pulse. So soul in Latin or in Italian is anima. It's what animates. So life exists because there is animation somewhere. Life in place, trade, exchange. Life can be tough because if you are not eaten, you will be eating. Or you know, it's tough in a way. You have to kill animal. But once you look at that, I'm sorry to cough.
That's okay.
When you look at that with finesse, you respect the life of the animal. You take their life for your life, not to satisfy your appetites or because you're concerned about your weight or whatever, but you connect to what's really going on. All right? Beyond the senses, you have that finesse, that capacity of feeling. We all experience intuition. There is a whole world which is not what I can process in my head. It happens way before I can process it in my head. Instead of being locked in my head on ID, just shift into what's beyond. Take the world of science. You know, we started with molecula, then we discovered atom, then electron, neutron, proton, then they went into quark and stuff like that. Now they are dealing with dark matter and dark energy. They are going into what they call it, string theories.
And super string.
Things go always beyond. They discover something mentally. Reality showed them that there is something beyond. They always hope to get the final point. That's where we are biased. It's never going to stop. Same way, I'm inclined to feel that beyond the material, beyond the thing that I can sense, there is energy flowing, there is, call it spirit, call it whatever you want, put a name on it, Jesus Christ, God, whatever, that you can imagine in your head out there. Look inside and try to connect to that. So at our modest individual level, any effort, any attention we can have to look at that game we play, individualizing ourselves in our head with all kind of concept, ideas, etc., or connecting to life. Go to Hatcher Pasky in the afternoon, communicate with nature. It's there, it's alive, it affects you fundamentally. Always pay attention to the whole and all the implication. Suddenly, seeing the Democrat and the Republican wanting each other guts with incredible argument, that possibly makes sense at that level. You see that stupid game, and you see the potential of what else could happen. So once you connect with that, a lot of things change. From stuff, you become quality. You need less stuff, but you need more quality. You bloom differently. You live instead of just plodding on.
I just got enlightened from a conversation about pork. We went from pork to
that's
dark matter and super things. That was beautiful. That was awesome.
It really ties together the theme of the show, which is individual health, community health, and culture. And culture being our shared agreements about what we actually value. And so much of what you've talked about is the cost of a reductionist, materialistic worldview that's governing most of the decisions that are being made at the level of politics, food production, education, and so forth, and healthcare for sure.
It comes down to an illusion of separation, you know, that somehow we're not part of this. That we somehow can have our little individual lives and our little protected boxes and, you know, and not affect anybody else, and nobody else gets in and affects us. I mean, where's the heart in that? But that's the illusion, you know, part of the illusion that a lot of people are living in. And so the worldview that you're talking about is very different. And
it's one of generosity, and I like the points you made about the one worldview is it ultimately seems to have the impulse of taking. Mm-hmm. You know, it's taking.
And wanting to have scarcity. More experiences. Yeah, there's not enough. I want to get mine. I want to have my stuff. Yeah.
But when you really undress that superficiality, like you're saying, going out into Hatcher Pass and really feeling into the direct experience of the life impulse itself, what naturally arises in abundance, a generosity, and then creativity, which seems like it's been the hallmark governing your life.
You get peace. You get intemporaneity. in the sense that some spiritual focus on the now. Now versus all the idea we can build. The taking, anyway, is failed. Because at the end, you die. So what about everything you've taken? Goodbye. So we don't even consider that. You know, the accumulative. We all are endowed, and that's part of, I think, the biological, the cellular life, by a need to survive. You know, we have an aggressivity, we have a need to provide for us, to protect ourselves. This exists. It's part of nature. But it's just one aspect. We're much more than that. So once you are driven by that instinct in accumulating and get frustrated because you never get what you want, the neighbor always have a little bit more, you always dream to go beyond, you can never really enjoy thing. You have those other instants where suddenly you flash and you're struck by beauty. You feel harmony, balance. Everything is in its place, and it works. So we have those impulses. They're rooted in a wider world. It's our choice to go one way or the other. We are both anyway. We cannot be one or the other. But at the center of awareness, the center of identity, there is a responsibility here.
Absolutely.
So when the charter of all Americans is freedom and want to be totally free to do their bidding, yeah, that's great. But it's undissociable from responsibility. To be really free, you have to be totally responsible.
Exactly.
All right?
And it's interesting because in our culture, there's a real movement away from that degree of responsibility. And the individual expression of doing whatever I want is the idealized form of freedom. But it turns out to be an empty bag. It actually isn't true. That the more we take responsibility for, the freer that we get. You know, I've read a profound statistic recently, which if the world consumed the level of the average American, if the world populations enjoyed the same standard of living that we have and we take for granted, that it literally would require six planets.
At least.
And if,
well, we have already two, with the help of the whole Walmart and the whole retailer. We have Planet China that we can exploit for ourselves. How long is it going to last? Some say it's about to end because it creates terrible imbalances.
Well, this has been great, Francois.
And
really,
we only got about a tenth of what we really wanted to talk about here, so we're going to have you back on again. So we really appreciate you joining us today.
It's been a real pleasure. And Francois, if people want to learn more about what you're doing or are really interested in following up, what's the best way for them to contact you?
One thing that works well with me is the email. I'm basically good at reading and answering. And it's not as disturbing as the phone that rings. So at least you master your time, you master your rhythm. So email is a good way to contact me. My email is franvec, F-R-A-N-V-E-C, @gmail.com. And professionally, for those who wants to really explore more of the meat business, with the help of Nate Burris of Mat Valley Meat, We have had in the last 6 months three. We're heading for the fourth. In 2 weeks, we'll have another seminar. It lasts 1 week. It goes from the whole carcass of the pig to all the possible meat product we can make. So that for somebody who wants to really know more about that specific. Beyond that, I'm interested, but I haven't found the partner to discuss, to try to act on that notion that some very fancy food can be produced in the valley. Very practically, for instance, Nate needs 4 or 5 pigs every 2 or 3 weeks. He has hard time finding them. There is one fellow who makes good pig in Kenny Lake, but they are not born in Alaska. They come from Alberta, so he just goes there, gets the runner, feeds them, and bring them for market here. We should find locally the support to put 100 or 200 sows in Matsu, and then have different farmers feeding those pig. We could improve the work of the slaughterhouse, and you would have already one aspect of the whole working. Because what's very interesting at the level of that shop, the public respond, and he has a sale. And he's not federally inspected. He's only state inspected, which put quite a number of restrictions on his capacity to sell the product further. So that's where the pump is already primed. It could expand rapidly. The other field would be to talk to the dairy people and the creamery, possibly talk to people. There are people who have milking ewes locally. They don't milk them. Mm. There used to be goats doing quite well. So bring back goats, bring back milking ewes, but have some craftsman cheesemaker, and the second leg would be on the ground. There are people who produce eggs. You have all kind of things that could develop.
Great. So, Francois, thank you again. We will have this information on our Facebook page, Bridge to Everywhere. You can search it on Facebook and find us. We'll have Francois's information. We'll have as much extra resources as we can post there as well.
And this will be rebroadcast on Thursday at 2 p.m. this week. So if you tuned in the middle of the broadcast and you want to hear more, please tune into the rebroadcast this Thursday at 2 p.m.
And thanks, everyone, for joining us tonight. It's been wonderful. Thank you, Francois.
Thanks, Francois.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk. Thank you.
Thank you. You're listening to The Bridge to Everywhere with Kevin Middleton and Samantha Berg.